Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.
It's just gone 2:30. Welcome along to this brand new feature. Every month we'll be taking a look at some of the issues affecting men. On the show today, we've got a roundup of all the men's issues and health news in Men's Bits. That's at 2:45. And at 2:50, Greg Butler's been to find out more about the men's breakfast in Foxton. Of course, you can get in touch with the show at any time by emailing me, matt@cambridge105.fm, or sending me a text on 07919 070 490. But first, I'm pleased to welcome my new regular guest, Nigel Bowman. Nigel is a trained counsellor, and every month he'll be telling us a bit more about different therapies available for those suffering from mental health problems. Good afternoon to you.
Hello, Matt. Thanks for having me on the programme.
No problem at all. So tell us about your role as a counsellor, because it covers such a broad topic.
Yeah, I think it's there's a bit of a mystery attached to counselling, and we all hear the term, we hear therapist as well, and wonder what the difference is. And I'd like to be able to just sort of maybe shine a bit of a light on that. From my background, I'm trained as a counsellor, and I'm trained in psychodynamic counselling, and we will talk about that in a few weeks' time. It's one of the routes that you can use, one of the types of counselling that can be used. And it's strange because, you know, we talk about it, but we don't actually define it, and there's a lot of mystery attached to it. So, you know, hopefully over the next few weeks, I can just sort of demystify it just a little bit, talk about some of the different approaches that can be taken. The NHS tends to favour CBT, for example, but it's not the only route, and it only really suits certain types of mental health problems. So it's as well to be aware of that. You know, if you can have that information to your hands, you can then ask them for alternatives or something like that. So hopefully there's a little bit of extra information, and there is no way that I can go into a huge amount of depth about it. But we would encourage you to come back to us if you would like to ask any questions, certainly, and do our best to answer them. But hopefully by the end of the series, you'll know a little bit more about it. And, you know, I can just sort of maybe just make people less concerned about the word counselling or therapy if it's offered to them.
Mm. And especially with men, it's very difficult for men to often go and find treatment if they're suffering from a mental health problem or anxiety or depression. There's quite a lot of stigma still attached to that, isn't there?
Yes, it is unfortunate, and the statistics sort of bear that out, which is a problem. I suppose it relates to the old adage of men sort of suffering in silence, and the stats are skewed quite badly in that sense, because they suspect that an awful lot of men don't report their problems, and it's only when the symptoms become so bad they can't live with them that they suddenly come out. But, you know, for example, you know, you talk about suicide, for example, which is an extreme, I know, but it is an issue. There's a very high rate of male suicide. In 2014, 4 in 5 suicides, or 78%, were by men. You know, the chilling note on that side is that for men under 35, suicide is the biggest cause of death. Now, that's something that you really need to sort of focus on and think, well, why should it be? And the only reason that people can actually come to is the fact that men, you know, are less willing to talk about these things.
If you look at the statistics, women are more likely to go and seek help at a mental health provider or go and see a counsellor, where men don't tend to do that. Yeah. And they often find it very difficult to talk around, especially male friends. I mean, when I suffered from depression, I found it very difficult to open out to some of my male friends. I actually found it easier to talk to women about the problems.
Yeah, actually, it's quite interesting, and it's a generational thing as well. And if you read about this, you can see that for the older generation, that the strong, quiet man was the thing. But it seems that as time has gone on, there's far more openness. So it'd be quite interesting to know that if younger people sort of feel that they are more able to talk to their friends and their colleagues about it. But it seems that the stats are bearing that out to a greater extent. But yeah, it's a factor. It's a factor which, you know, all of the therapists have to take into account. But again, just, you know, repeating what I said, by knowing a little bit more about it, knowing there's no stigma attached attached to it, knowing that, that counselling and therapy is a route to take, which is hugely beneficial, but it is a personal choice, you know, and that is there for people to take, and it's a completely confidential approach, and almost in a way can be tailored to what you want in terms of, you know, the length of time that you want it, what the outcomes you're looking for, and that sort of thing. And I think that in itself suits it more to the male psyche, if you like, having a little bit more control.
Do you find that that different mental health problems affect different people in society? Do you find that older men tend to suffer from one form of a mental health problem and younger men a different form? The same with women?
I don't, and I don't know if there are any stats to support that, you know, because if you look at some of the reasons why people, you know, might look for counselling, and you know, there are many and various, but if you look at the common ones like divorce, losing the job, unemployment, loss of identity, anxiety, depression, bereavement, eating disorders. Now, there's something that's in the press at the moment with Dame Joan Bakewell's rather unfortunate comments at the weekend. But I think that all of these things seem to apply across the age range. I mean, if you think about marital breakdown, relationship issues, you know, it looks like, you know, the stats are saying it's happening to people in their 60s as much as it might be to those in their 20s and 30s. So I've never read of anything that actually says, you know, certain things affect certain people at different ages. And I think it's really for people to be prepared to talk about it and admit that, you know, maybe they have an issue and they need to explore it further.
But there are other topics like domestic violence. I mean, men can be victims of domestic violence as well, and that can lead on to depression, anxiety, and being hurt inside.
Very much so. And another one that I came across, which is very little known, is that men can suffer from postnatal depression. Obviously not for exactly the same reasons as a woman can, but in terms of the end of the pregnancy and the arrival of the newborn has a fairly major effect on some men, and it's something which never would have been admitted in the past, but it is a factor.
Is that because traditionally the man is the provider in the household, and it sort of take a step back for a second and think to yourself, well, I've now got another person, another mouth to feed. Is that possibly one of the reasons why?
Well, I would think it is that, you know, but I think then you look at the partner, and the partner will be having issues as well because it's a major life change. But the couple bind so much up in it, don't they? You know, and it is possible for it to have an emotional effect, because it's a hugely emotional experience anyway, to have an emotional effect on the man as much as a woman. Women, it tends to be hormonal, but in the men's case, it is an emotional issue.
So if a man comes to a counselling session for the first time, what things do you want to glean from that individual on the first appointment that they make with you?
Well, I think it's very important to realise that each client that comes to a counselling session really dictates how they want to go. And it's essentially a listening treatment, if you like. It's a speaking treatment, a listening treatment. So I would provide my clients with an opportunity to just talk to me. You know, I would suggest maybe they'd like to just sort of tell me a bit about their lives, tell me a bit about, you know, what's happening for them, what some of the issues might be, without sort of focusing on any one particular issue at this stage, but just to get a better impression. The important thing with any counselling sessions is that the person needs to be perfectly relaxed, perfectly, you know, just happy to be there, you know, and if there's any stress related to it, it's not really going to work. So it's putting people at their ease, answering any questions they might have. Often in the first session, there are a lot of questions. How is it going to work? You know, what's the length of the therapy? What sort of things are we going to cover? How much does it cost? These sort of things would be covered in very much in the initial session. But it's for the individual client to determine how they wish to play it. You know, it's very much in their control.
It's interesting that you mentioned length of therapy. That varies considerably from person to person, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And that depends on the approach that's being used. One of the reasons why the NHS favours CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy, is that it is a therapy that does have a sort of length of time when it can be applied. And that can be something like 8 to 12 sessions. But then if you look at psychodynamic therapy, which is the approach that I use, it's open-ended and it can go on for a number of years. It doesn't have to, but you are looking a lot more deeply into a person, into their emotions, and it does take a lot longer to do. So it can be anything from, I guess, 6 to 8 weeks to a very long time. But again, if the client comes to the counsellor and says, you know, this is what I'm looking to address, you know, and I don't want to be coming here in a year's time, the counsellor will have the skill to address the key problems and satisfy the client in terms of doing it within that time scale. They may say, look, I think you need to spend a bit longer, but it's entirely an individual thing. But there's no hard and fast rule as to how long, you know, counselling sessions might go on for. It is very much dependent on the issue in hand, the type of counselling that you're choosing, your financial resources at the end of the day, because it, you know, yes, there are free resources, yes, the NHS can pay, but there is also a very big private supplier of this, and then the issue comes in terms of actual cost.
And there are a whole host of mental health charities that do provide support in Cambridge and the surrounding villages as well. So,
Yeah, I did my training with a charity and provided free voluntary services, and a lot of those are around, and an awful lot of counsellors do offer voluntary services as well. So, you know, I think really, you know, to me, the thing is to realise that talking therapies are a real help to people's mental health, and there is no problem. There shouldn't be a problem for people actually volunteering to become part of it. Working with a counsellor helps to establish a much healthier way of thinking about your problems and also devising coping mechanisms. So, you know, I would urge people to think hard about it and take that first step. It's not a sign of weakness; it's a sign of strength.
Excellent stuff. Well, Nigel, it's been fantastic talking to you, and we'll talk to you again in a month's time about one of the therapies available for people with mental health problems. And if people want to find out more details about your services, how would they go about that?
Well, I think the best thing is to go onto the 105 website, and on there will be my website. And I think use that or my email address. Drop me a quick email. Very happy to address any of the issues that are there. And hopefully, you know, we might be able to talk about it in the next program if you're happy about that. But certainly, please do. Just drop me an email or give me a quick call.
Nigel, thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Talking Men on Cambridge 105.
Welcome back. Still to come, we're heading down to the men's breakfast in Foxton with Greg Butler. But first,
Men's Bits, a roundup of this month's men's issues making the news.
Scientists have found a link between low levels of testosterone and the most aggressive form of prostate cancer. The simple test may give hope to thousands of men who are undergoing treatment. Many men with the advanced stages of prostate cancer undergo surgery to remove the prostate, but they can suffer relapses and poor survival rates. It's the most common cancer in UK men, with more than 40,000 new cases diagnosed each year. There are calls to help more men who are victims of domestic violence. It follows the case of Sharon Edwards, who was jailed earlier this month for stabbing her husband David to death at their home in Chorley. It's been revealed she had subjected her husband to months of physical abuse. Figures from the Crime Survey for England and Wales suggest 600,000 men were victims of domestic abuse in the year to March 2015. And finally, a man has celebrated the end of his testicular cancer treatment by getting a massive tattoo of the A-Team star, Mr. T. Gavin Litchfield celebrated his all clear by getting the giant tattoo on his arm, complete with the slogan, "Check your nuts." That's apparently what inspired him to check his own testicles for lumps. The 31-year-old said he wanted to highlight the importance of men checking their testicles after he found the cancerous lump last year. That's your monthly roundup of Men's Bits. If you've got a new story, email me, matt@cambridge105.fm.
Talking Men with Matt Webb on Cambridge 105.
Often men in society define themselves as their work and dedicate most of their time when not at work to their immediate family. This means they don't always cultivate a social network outside of these two pillars of their lives. In many cases, on retirement or with the loss of a loved one, older men can easily find themselves isolated. Joining a local men's breakfast club offers a lifeline of fellowship, social contact and interest to many men. There are plenty of local clubs, including ones in Willingham and Littleport or in Cambridge itself, such as those at St Paul's. Cambridge 105's Greg Butler was invited to one such club based in Foxton, organised by Mark Howard and Tony Garrick. Greg started by asking them how the group was set up.
It started many years ago, I think probably 7 or 8 years ago. It was the child, if I may put it that way, of the Four Churches Benefice. That's the Anglican Church, which covers Foxton, Falmer, Shepreth and Triplow.
Okay.
These are the four churches within this benefit, so it's four parishes effectively. It started as an outreach or a form of outreach, mostly for gentlemen, but we say gentlemen and their guests, which can include women. So women are always welcome, and indeed we do have women come along, not just as guests, but also as speakers.
And how often do you have these breakfast meetings?
We have them on the third Saturday of each month during the year, but we do miss out Easter and Christmas for obvious reasons, because they do tend to clash with the dates that we otherwise would usually have.
Who have you got coming up, Tony?
Well, today we've got Rajinder Sharma, who's our speaker, who's talking about smart cities, and okay. He's involved with Milton Keynes, and he's going to talk to us about how for the future, Milton Keynes is going to be one of the most joined up cities in the country. Coming up, we've also got our MEP in March, right. Vicky Ford, who is going to talk to us about the current situation with the European community and Britain's position in that.
So quite a varied programme coming up, and I hear that you're booked up all the way up to next February.
We are now, yes, thanks to our speaker manager, Mark Howard. He works diligently and he endeavours to get speakers to us for a good 12 to 16 months ahead.
Okay, you're expecting about 26, 28 people today.
Yes.
How does it actually work? How does the Breakfast Club run? Morning.
We run by advertising in the parish magazines, and we put posters out in the various villages that are around, and we've also got representatives in the villages who are very kind, and of their own free will they put up posters and advertise what we're doing.
So when people arrive, what happens?
They are welcome to coffee and a drink. We've got a very good breakfast here, so we sit down and we have a full fried English breakfast, which does attract quite a lot of gentlemen.
Yeah.
And there's also a continental breakfast as well, if they want to choose. Then we have our breakfast, and then our speaker is introduced. They give a talk, usually for about 20 to 30 minutes. And afterwards, we invite questions, and we endeavour to get a discussion going. Then after that, we invite those who want to stay behind to help with the clearing up and the washing up. And believe it or not, we do get quite a crush of gentlemen in the kitchen.
Is this the only one in Cambridgeshire and surrounding areas, or are there other breakfast clubs that you know about?
No, there are many breakfast clubs, and they run independently. Sometimes they're done as part of church outreach groups, as this one is, or has this one started. We invite men to come along and share fellowship, discussion. It's educational, and hopefully it brings them out and gives them a wider view of the world, and also a chance to speak to men in a similar situation to themselves. I don't call us grey beards or grey heads, but generally speaking, we probably are of the older generation. But we do have younger men. I mean, I'm talking sort of 40s and 50s, who would like to come out and have a chance for a good discussion and a fried breakfast, of course. It's getting people out to meet others, particularly where you've got men who are recently bereaved, if they're widowers, and where they've retired. You know, this gives them the opportunity to come out and learn about what's been going on in the village and around them, and express their views, share friendship and fellowship, make new friends even. So this is the idea of it.
Welcome to you all. It's very, very pleasing to see so many of you here, actually. It must be something to do with our speaker this morning. Yeah. Rajinder Sharma, and he's travelled probably the furthest distance to be here from the rest of us. He's come over from the other side of Milton Keynes. So it's a long way to come for, what will be a fantastic breakfast. We know that. But he's also got to work for his breakfast and talk to us for about half an hour or so. And there's a short presentational video. And afterwards, we'll have some questions and I hope perhaps some discussion as well, which would be good.
Thank you.
Over to you, Rajinder.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you to Mark and Tony for inviting me today to Cambridge. It's always a pleasure to come to these parts. And also, thank you very much for the breakfast. Those eggs were fantastic.
Milton Keynes is the UK's fastest growing city. Like all growing cities, it's going to need more water efficiency, cleverer energy usage, and better transport solutions if its growth is going to be sustainable.
Milton Keynes is growing really quickly, and we've got plans for 28,000 new homes, and that's going to place enormous pressure on our existing infrastructure. We can't just continue to do things in the way that we have done today. We've got to find new and innovative ways of dealing with that.
It's a big issue, and not just for Milton Keynes, but for pretty much everybody in the UK and most people on the planet.
90% of us in the UK live in cities, and for the first time in history, more...
As the video mentioned, as Professor Motta mentioned, this is about cities, how cities are growing, how populations are growing. I mean, if you look at the global population, we've got 7 billion people in this world today. That's going to grow bigger. It's estimated by 2050 that the 70 to 75% of the world's population will live in and around cities. And this will cause enormous pressure in terms of infrastructure, if you look at energy, water and transport. You know, in Milton Keynes the situation is much more intense because we are the fastest growing city in the UK. The population is roughly around about 270,000. It's estimated by 2026 the population will have grown by another 25%. So if we take transport, what do? Do we start building more roads, or can we use technology in a clever way, in a smart way, to sustain that urban growth and urban development? So the origins of Milton, the MK Smart Project, is really to look at how cities can sustain urban growth and urban development. So I've only touched on a little portion of what a smart city is, but we've got all these other facets to that. These are my details, and happy, you know, if anybody wants to email me or etc. After this, after the question and answer session. Thank you.
I'm with Adrian. Adrian is a county councillor for Cambridge. He's based in Basingbourne, but he comes here to Foxton for the Breakfast Club. How did you get involved, Adrian?
I was invited as a speaker, and I came along to give them a talk on how to use computers and their use with regards to the internet. And unfortunately, they couldn't get rid of me, and I've been coming back ever since.
And you've been helping run the technical side. So today you were running the projector and helping out with the slideshow and all that sort of thing.
Yes, I also sit on the committee, and I'm one of the chefs. Unfortunately, I wasn't cooking for you today, or you could have sampled my delights. And we take it in turns, and we organise the speakers, and I also look after all the tech to make sure that our visitors can show their presentations in a good format so that everyone can see it.
What do you think the value of having these breakfast clubs in Cambridgeshire is?
I think it's very good because, as you can see by the cross-section that we've got, it's starting to get to be an elderly population that we have, and there's quite a lot of friendship, and everyone gets together once a month, has a good discussion, has a good talk, all on different subjects, and they can all enjoy themselves, and we donate to charity.
And today I think it was all going to Parkinson's. In the future it'll go to another charity chosen by the guest speaker.
Yes, we as a committee do not specify charities. What we ask for is that they come along, give their time, and we will donate what we get left over from the monies that we take in from people paying for the breakfast, and that is then donated on average between £70 and £100 every time.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks.
That was Greg Butler reporting from the Men's Breakfast in Foxton. And that wraps up this first edition of Talking Men. You'll be able to hear this as a podcast on the Cambridge 105 website. And of course, if you've got a topic you'd like me to cover, email matt@cambridge105.fm. And remember to tune in to our sister show, Cambridge Women, monthly at 2 p.m. on Saturdays. All the details on our website, cambridge105.fm.
Talking Men on Cambridge 105.